Welcome to Black Blood Hills, brought to you by NMDP. NMDP manages the world's most diverse blood stem cell donor registry. Tune in each week as I share tools and resources on ways you can be a change agent and save a life in your community. Welcome to Black Blood Hills. I'm your host, Tamara Weston, and today I am joined by Dr. Edward Zyga. He is currently Assistant Professor of Clinical Pediatrics, and he's going to talk with me today about the Hispanic and Latino members of the communities that are or in need of a stem cell transplant. Welcome, Dr. Zyga. How are you today?
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here and to talk about what I do. My field is pediatric blood marrow transplant and cell therapy. So my daily work is with people, like children who need stem cell transplantation for many disorders like sickle cell disease, leukemias, and others. So I'm glad to be here.
Well, thank you. And we're glad to have you here. Let's jump right in. We normally talk about on this show, we do talk about stem cell therapy and how it affects African-Americans. When we think about African-Americans, we think about the U.S. side. So I'm glad to have you today because we're going to talk about two separate things. We're going to talk about the Black Latino and the Black Caribbean community, and we'd love for you to expand on what that exactly means and how they're identified. And then we're going to also talk about your work in Ghana. Want to understand what that segmentation is of comparison between U.S. and Ghana. So let's talk about it. First, can you walk us through, and this might not be the right way to phrase it, so definitely correct me, but when we think about a Black Latino or a member of a Black Caribbean community, can you tell us how they're identified?
Yes. It's actually very opportune that we talk about this group because they are a group that have a lot of challenges in accessing, the kind of services that they need. And also they're impacted by certain disorders like sickle cell disease, definitely more than others. And so it's good that we're able to define them. What I describe when I talk about people of the Black and Latino communities are people whose ancestry is from the African geography, who now have also a descent from the Caribbean and Latin American countries. And so we know that this group of people, for instance, if we're looking for donors, have the lesser odds of having a donor compared to other groups like the Caucasians.
Okay.
On their own, African Americans and Latinos. Now, having a person who is now an African and Latino combined even makes it more challenging to access the donors for them. So clearly, I see them as a group that we need to know more about so that we can design programs that can really help them access healthcare, and in my case, bone marrow transplant or stem cell transplant.
Absolutely. Let's take a step back. When we talk about, again, I want to provide clarity for the audience. When we say Black Latino, are we saying that the parents, one is African American and one is of Latino descent, or are we saying something different?
So it could be multiple ways. You can have a child, a parent whose parents were a combination of Latino and Black.
Okay.
Now we know that they're in Mexico, Guatemala, Peru, other Latin American countries have also Blacks in those countries.
Mm-hmm.
So they are people of Latin descent, but their ancestry originates back in Africa.
Ah, okay. So it goes all the way back.
There you go.
Got it. So as with everything else, and you also noticed that members of the Black, Latino, and Caribbean family, they also have a high penetration of sickle cell?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
They do. And that, you can trace that all the way back to Africa.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's a lot of historical documents on the path of sickle cell disease from Africa around, of course, the slave routes, all the way to the Americas and around the Americas. So wherever you see Black Hispanics or Blacks, the likelihood of seeing communities with sickle cell disease is high.
Okay, so, wow, this is getting good now. Okay, so when we think about sickle cell, and we can trace it all the way back to slavery, and that's how we know it's down.
Back to Africa. And I'm talking about the slavery route. So anywhere that slaves ended, they ended having slaves, those areas, those geographic areas actually have sickle cell disease.
Okay, so we can trace it back there, but that doesn't mean that only African Americans suffer from sickle cell, right? We have Caucasians that suffer from sickle cell.
And so that is not very well documented, but combinations of Africans and Caucasians, if you have someone who has multiple ancestry, mm-hmm. And also clearly in the Hispanic world where you have the black Hispanics, and the also Hispanics who are not even blacks also have high incidence of sickle cell disease.
Okay. And then also I do want to preface that while we often talk about sickle cell, because again, it runs very high in African-American communities, there are over 70 diseases. Some of them have some really long names that I won't even try to pronounce. And then some of them we hear less about, but it doesn't make them any less important, correct? But sickle cell is what we talk about mostly because it is very highly penetrated in the African American community. And now, from what we understand, also within Black, Latino, and Black Caribbean communities, correct?
Correct.
Got it. Okay. So in your profession, in your practice, are many of your patients from the Latino community?
Yes. I would say that more than half of the patients that I see are from the Latin communities, and also more than around 40% also Blacks. That is for sickle cell disease. Now, if you look at leukemia, then we also have Caucasians. It's a mix of Caucasians and African American and Hispanics. But for sickle cell disease, which is a disease that is inherited, we see a lot more, of course, obviously because of that inheritance in the Blacks and the Hispanics.
Okay, so you touched on something. When you say inherited, I know that there's often questions or confusion between blood types and HLA testing affecting whether or not you're a match for someone with sickle cell or any of the other blood cancers or diseases. Let's talk a little bit about the difference between the two and if there's any correlation.
It comes up a lot. Most people think that once you have the same blood group, you can be a donor, a stem cell donor for a patient.
And when we talk about blood groups, we're talking about the
ABO blood groups, yes. So the ABO blood groups are a different set of types, ways we type red blood cells, different from what we do when we do HLA typing.
Okay.
And though they are both very specific typing that describes certain entities that is inherited in one person than the other, they are not the same when we talk about stem cell transplantation.
Okay.
So blood groupings, we use that when we're looking for donors for blood transfusion or platelets and hematopoietic cell, transfusions. HLA typing are specific proteins that are on different cells.
Yes.
That we use to look for people who are compatible, match on those proteins. Those proteins, we call it HLA, the human leukocyte antigens, they are shown to be the most potent predictor of a person's accepting or rejecting a stem cell donor. And so we use that to look for a match for stem cell transplant. And we use the ABO blood groups to look for a donor for blood transfusion or platelet transfusions.
And as we've talked about in the past, you can be a match either as a familiar match, meaning someone from your family, correct? And then you can also be an unrelated donor match, but it all really depends on that HLA protein.
Exactly, exactly. Okay. So the fact that you have the same ABO blood group as your sibling or family member doesn't necessarily mean that you have the full HLA composed between the two of you.
Gotcha.
And it's also likely that someone who is not related to you in a way distant place in the world, diaspora, will have a very similar HLA match, mm-hmm. but to you, much better than your siblings or your other family members. And of course, we know that a parent has half the complement of the HLA type. So for sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, when we think about matching, what are the chances of a Black donor, meaning I'm using these words very carefully because I don't want to, although there is a difference, I don't want it to be seen as a difference. So when we think about, when I say Black donor, I'm thinking of someone from the U.S. What are the chances of someone from being a Black donor matching a Black Latino patient that's in need of a match?
So clearly, there's a lot of data that's shown that there's a wide disparity between different ethnic groups based on studies done, which is available, between African-American and Caucasian.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Latino come in between, but the African-American have the lowest odds of having them get a match from the registry.
Yes, sir.
Now, being African-American and then a Latino, so the African-Latino is a combination that we don't have much data about if you have that double combination. But we know that in the group that describes the Latinos, that percentage that you see is general across all Latinos. It could be different between those from Mexican, you know, descent, from, you know, Peru. It could mm-hmm. be different, but that's a general.
Okay.
In that group, I must believe that if you are both a Latino and a Black in that group, you even have a lesser chance, a lesser odds of getting a donor.
Lesser odds.
Lesser, yes. Because you are now looking at an African and Latino who are not well represented in the pool.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Okay.
Africans on their own are not represented. Latinos even less than Caucasians, but a little bit higher than African. So to be the Black and then Latino, the odds are much higher.
So we've had guests on the show talk about this before, and I'll try to put it in simple terms because, you know, sometimes I like to be talked to like I'm a 6-year-old. My mind just, you know, needs to gather it. So when we think about finding a match, when we think about people joining the registry, it is not as simple as black and white. It is really about, and correct me if I say this incorrectly, a genetic makeup. So if you are a donor, I'm sorry, if you're a searching patient who is maybe your mother is from United States, but your father is from Colombia, then the chances of you, or Jamaica, mm-hmm. the chances of you finding a match are slightly lower mm-hmm. than if both of your parents were of the same ethnicity, because now you're kind of, you have to find a donor that might share the same makeup as Black and
exactly.
Colombian.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
And there are patients who have multiple ethnicities,
a mm-hmm.
little bit of, you know, African-American, Latino, some even have a little bit of Caucasian also in the background. And that becomes even more challenging to find a donor registry. I must say, I have hand experience. I have two patients right now
mm-hmm.
who are on, who've been searching for donors for the past. I joined the faculty based in Miami about 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I met them when I came in, and still don't have a donor.
How long ago?
10 years now.
Wow,
that I am aware
searching for 10 years.
And before I joined the program, they were already on our list.
So you don't even know how long they were on before you actually
exactly.
joined.
And his sickle cell disease is just getting worse. The mother called me. He's now back in the ICU with acute syndrome. In this group, we're trying to use the haplotransplant, which is, you know, part of ongoing research. Unfortunately, both parents have disorders that don't make them match
eligible.
Eligible, yes.
Well, you definitely tapped into something as this patient, and I pray that he does find a match. When does it become necessary? I know every patient is different. I know every case is different. But when does it become necessary that someone actually needs a match? Because I've heard that there are, you know, ways to, there's medicine to help you. There's, you know, chemotherapy or other options. But when does it become necessary that a transplant now has to be a serious discussion?
Yes. So that's good. That's a very good question, because most people think that because transplant is the only cure for sickle cell disease at this time, you can just go in and get the transplant and be cured. But transplant has its own inherent, you know, challenges. It's quite a very intense therapy. It's increased risk of complications. So it's not offered to everyone. We have a way of looking at those who have the very severe disease process. For instance, this young man who's been ICU almost four times already this year with acute chest syndrome, people who've required transfusions to prevent stroke or to manage stroke that now develop iron overload or are now having proteins in their blood that develop against transfusion. So it become now a challenge to get transfusions. When we see those changes, we know that those patients don't have much longer to live because they're going to have a poor quality of life or they're going to have more complications. At that point, transplant becomes an option because the risks of transplant at this time outweighs the risks, is much lower than the risk of going on with the disease. In that case, there's a benefit that transplant offers that, you know, if the child continued without transplant, would not do well. So it's kind of risk-benefit ratio every time.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Earlier on, when patients don't have any much many symptoms, we want them to continue on the medications we have at this time. But once they're on those medications, hydroxyurea, we now have new medications that were approved recently by FDA, and we recommend that all patients try those medications before even we talk about transplants. So if they are failing the medications or not tolerate it, then we go to transplant.
It's a lot. And again, I always want to just remind the audience that when we talk about stem cell therapy, we understand it is not an easy decision to make. It's not an easy process. And as you just talked about what some of the searching patients go through, it's a big change. It's a big decision that you have to make. But hopefully all of the information that we always share helps people to really say, is this for me? When we think about, let's shift gears for a little bit. You do a lot of work in Ghana.
Yes, I do.
Tell us a little bit about that.
I began going to Ghana after my fellowship. I was born in Ghana and came to the U.S. about 23 years ago. Mm-hmm. Went to my residency and two fellowships in hematology oncology and bone marrow transplants in Memphis, Tennessee. And I always see myself as what America is to the world.
Okay.
People like me come here, get a chance to be well trained, and we are sent back to the world, you know, to help. Okay. And that's the beauty of coming here to the US. And growing up in Ghana, I saw the way sickle cell disease and other chronic illnesses devastated, you know, my friends and families and my patients in the hospital. So I always wanted to go back.
Okay.
And help. So I've been going since 2018 to work with a group. We formed a group called Bone Marrow Transplant Ghana. We did the first transplant for a sickle cell disease patient in 2018.
Okay.
Unfortunately, she did not, she engrafted, but died from GVHD. But we've since gone ahead to transplant seven other patients with mixed results.
Okay.
And I've developed also networking with colleagues in Ghana where we do consult through WhatsApp every now and then. Any cases that they have that they, you know, we discuss that. And I'm now developing a program between residents here in our program in Miami and Accra, Ghana. So we will be able to go down to Accra and do some rotations and in the long term have some Ghanaian young colleagues come here to train. I'll be going with the first group in January. Yeah,
That's amazing. And I love the purpose of wanting to give back, the premise of wanting to give back. So talk about some of the differences in culture from thoughts of the registry or donating stem cells from members of the Ghana community versus members of the U.S.
I would say that members of the Ghanaian community are actually more eager to be volunteers in the registry.
Okay.
We just don't have a registry available to them in Ghana. And one of my long-term goals is to be able to help facilitate that.
Okay.
Here in the U.S., understandably from the historical, you know, background, people are quite adamant to be in the registry for obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to talk to them more, give them more reasons why they should be volunteers. I am in the registry. Once I became a hematology oncology fellow, I signed up in the registry. Okay. And I'm waiting to be called one day.
It could happen.
It could happen.
It could happen.
Yes. And that I can't tell people to join when I'm not a member.
Absolutely.
Yes. So there's a difference. Both groups understand the need for representation. They see the benefit of transplants. They see patients who have been transplanted are cured, and for them, it's a good thing. But they're just a bit skeptical here in the U.S., and understand that. So we need to do more work here, telling people about these stories, showcasing the benefits of what we do, and having them buy in into this concept.
I love it. I think that as the world expands, learning more about how the world understands and thinks of stem cell therapy is probably going to be a huge benefit to us as we try to grow the registry, because we can tap into those emotions and those feelings.
Big time, big time. And I'm hoping that we can expand this to areas around the world, like in Africa, because if we have people here of African American ancestry, they could a lot benefit from what happens in our
absolutely.
And I know resources and challenges of being in under-resourced countries like Ghana, but if we can do that, that would be a good resource.
Now, when are you going back to Ghana?
Hopefully early next year, about 3 weeks from now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so you'll be there for Christmas?
Hopefully. My mother-in-law is waiting for me.
Oh, okay.
Early New Year, after New Year, yes.
Okay. Well, this has been enlightening. We have always tried to strive to have the guest on that can give us just immeasurable information. And I think you've done that for us today.
Thank you.
You have shed a light a little bit more on the difference, of course, between Black, Latino, and Caribbean, but also how we still align, right? There's still a correlation. There's still a connection. So we still need more African Americans to join the registry.
We do. It is much more than now than ever, because now we are seeing transplant much safer than before. Mm-hmm. We are seeing more diseases that we can treat that are amenable to transplant, and there are more patients that are diagnosed early. So the need is much, much more than now than ever.
Okay. Well, as we wind down this episode, as always, I like to give the guests an opportunity. If you can, give one last message, whether it's to a potential donor or to a searching patient, what would that be?
What I would say is that this is something on your podcast which said, it takes all of us to save one of us. I thought that speaks volumes. So all of us out there, please, let's go sign up for the registry.
Absolutely.
And be part of it. And all of out there who need transplant, let's not give up. Because help is on the way.
Absolutely.
And we are here as your physicians and your team to support and help you.
I love it. I love it. And as we wind down, I will add to that, what we've shared with you today is that because of heritage and, because of the world as it's expanding, there's opportunities to save others that look like you and that don't exactly look like you. So if you are still on the fence about joining the registry, if you are still wondering if you can make a difference, just know you can. All we need is you to take that opportunity, take that chance, find out a little bit more, do a little bit more research, make the best decision for you. And if that is to join the registry, then you absolutely can and should do that. So think about it. And let us know.
And welcome. Join the family.
Yes, join the family. I love it. I love it. With that, I'm going to end it. And as I always say, it will take all of us to save just one of us. Thank you for tuning in to Black Blood Heals. Head over to nmdp.org for more information on how you can join the registry and get involved. Make sure you subscribe, share, and tell a friend about Black Blood Heals.